Here on 89.9 Classical WMUK. Good morning. It's 7 minutes past 10 o'clock. I'm Kara Laurence. This is Let's Hear It. And I am feeling in a very celebratory mood today. First of all, I have two wonderful guests. One here in the studio, pianist Laurie Sims from the faculty of Western Michigan University. And soon on the phone line, we'll have her colleague, professor of saxophone, Andrew Rathbun. And we're celebrating the release of a wonderful program of Debussy and improvisations on Debussy. It's actually called Impressions of Debussy, a Centaur release that came out a little while ago now, but the pandemic got in the way, and I'm so thrilled to be able to celebrate it this hour with Laurie and Andrew. Laurie, I'm thrilled to have you as my first guest post-pandemic here in the studio.
Thank you. Always nice to be here.
Will you tell us what the translation of this first prelude is? We'll get started with music. It's called Les Sons et les Parfums.
This is the sounds and the perfumes turn in the evening air. And it's a particularly stunning Debussy prelude in that some people may know this, that Debussy was considered to be a synesthetic. And it is I think it's a wonderful example of and this is hardly ever seen in all of music, of of music that is actually evocative of the sense of smell, which is, it's easy to imagine things that we hear or that we feel or that we see, but to smell. So one hears the sensation of perfumes and perhaps a boudoir, all kinds of things like that. Yeah.
From the album Impressions of Debussy, we heard first the original Debussy prelude, Les Sons et les Parfums, or the sounds and the scents in the air swirling. And then we heard what's called a reimagination, or a take on that prelude written by or conceived by Jeremy Siskind and played by Jeremy Siskind and Andrew Rathbun. Today, Laurie Sims and Andrew Rathbun are on the faculty at Western Michigan University. Jeremy Siskind is former faculty. This new album was recorded in March of 2017, Laurie, and now it's released here in 2020, and I'm so thrilled to be able to have the chance to have a conversation about it. And now I believe I can welcome Andrew Rathbun to the conversation. Hello, Andrew.
Hey, Kara, how are you?
Very good. Very good today. I'm getting a jolt of adrenaline from this experience today. So where should we begin the story? First of all, I'd like to tell listeners that this is, has this been nominated or is it in the running for a nomination for a 2020 Grammy?
Yeah, it's on the ballot in the classical category, like, you know, chamber classical category. So it's on the ballot to get nominated. So we're, you know, I think it's a fairly long shot that it gets nominated, but it's nice to be included on the ballot. You know, I've made like 15 records, and this is the first one that's ever been actually on the ballot. So that's nice. It was a nice surprise. So we're happy that it's been included with a lot of other great recordings.
So it's now up to members of the Grammy group?
It's up to NARIS voting members to, so that this is like the first round, so they get like a huge list of all these recordings that are considered for nomination. And then obviously when the records are nominated, then they get another ballot later on to choose the winner in those different categories.
Well, let's go back to the idea for this album. Lori writes in the program notes that it actually came from the then executive director of the Gilmore Keyboard Festival, Dan Gustin. Lori, maybe you can tell us a little about that proposal.
Sure. Dan and I would somehow always about a year or a year and a half before a festival, we'd go down to the Park Club and have lunch and and talk about everything under the sun. And he'd say, "Well, so what do you want to do?" And I had just come off of this Goldberg thing, and I thought, "Geez, you know, what do you do after that? It just doesn't feel like there's anything more to do." But it sort of came to me in a flash that, "Wow, Debussy, this would be something. This is like the alternate universe, and I would love to do this." So I suggested I wanted to do both books and on two separate days, which was a long shot. I remember suggesting it to him. I'm like, he's probably not going to go for this. And then he did. And I was like, oh, lots of work for me. And then he wrote and he said, you know, I really want to have, I'd really like to have Jeremy and Andrew do these improvisations in between. So it's like a, you know, a sandwich. And I thought, that's a fantastic idea. And I mean, it's kind of one of those ideas that's either going to really, really work or it's really, really not going to work. But people, I think that was why we got so excited about the recording, is because the audience loved it and they were sort of right afterwards, well, you're going to make a recording of this? So it was really through the encouragement and largely some pretty substantial sponsorship from lovely people in Kalamazoo and people who are really interested in music that kind of spurred us into wanting to do it. And also, I must say, Andrew's incredibly hard work to make it all happen. I want to make it very clear that I did basically nothing.
Well,
I showed up and I played and that was pretty much it. No, Andrew, yeah. This has been Andrew's Andrew's baby, and he's like just done a fantastic job with all of the aspects of having it recorded and mastering it, and he sweat all the blood and tears over this. So
So Andrew, it was an easy yes for you to say, sure, I'll improvise on Debussy Preludes.
Yeah, well, I did a record with this pianist George Colligan where we did the same thing with this Spanish composer that jazz musicians are kind of sort of gaga about, named Federico Monpeau. Yeah. And so we did some pieces of Ravel and pieces of Monpeau and sort of opened them up and sort of played on them. You know, this project was a little bit more involved in terms of sort of, as you mentioned earlier, reimagining some of the pieces. Some of the pieces are close to the original and some are really not. So it sort of runs the gamut. And I think that's one of the things that make the recording interesting. And certainly, you know, Lori is downplaying her role, her like the realizations and her interpretations of the the Debussy is really, I think, what makes this thing kind of lift off the ground. Like to be able to juxtapose such beautiful renditions of the pieces with what we're doing, you know, I don't think it's nearly the same experience without that. So I think that's really important to also acknowledge that.
I'd like to take another musical break pretty soon here. But first, I wondered, Andrew, why was it a deliberate choice to play soprano saxophone throughout on this recording?
Yeah, for me, you know, it's a little bit closer. And I, not to get too technical, but I sort of changed the setup of the instrument. So it's a little closer to like a classical set up. I'm playing like a very small mouthpiece and very less, you know, not that hard a strength of reed. So it just suited the music more to me. I think one of the hardest things to do is the classical tenor, and I wasn't willing to kind of go into that zone. So it just seemed to suit the music a lot more. Also the tessitura of the instrument. Some of the melodies in Debussy are much, you know, more well suited to the range of the soprano. So it was easier to adapt and keep the pieces in their original keys, which we wanted to do as much as we could, using the soprano rather than the tenor.
I think that does make the album flow very, very naturally from piece to piece.
Yes.
I'd like to play one of your reimaginings, starting with the original Prelude, and Laurie and I thought perhaps Canope would
yes.
be one.
Great.
Would you talk about, if you can remember, it's 3 years ago now since you recorded it, but what was your approach?
Yeah, this is one of the ones where we wanted to stay. Every one of these pieces, they're so beautiful. And, you know, sometimes with the ones that we did get far away from, it almost felt like a little sacrilegious. But I think in most of the cases, we kind of get away with it. This is one that when I was, you know, thumbing through the music and listening to different versions, you know, different recorded versions of the music, this is one I thought this would be interesting if we stayed a little closer to it and tried to sort of like pry it open and sort of extend it a little bit with some improvisation that still stays close to the original intent of the piece.
Impressions of Debussy is the album. Centaur Records is the label that released it in 2020. And my guests here today are jazz saxophonist Andrew Rathbun, who reimagined Canope, and Laurie Sims, who plays the original on this brand new album from Centaur. We'll be back with Laurie and Andrew after we listen to the two pieces. We heard two kinds of Debussy. First, his original prelude, Canope, And then a reimagination of that prelude by Andrew Rathbun, featuring the playing of Andrew Rathbun, soprano saxophone, and Jeremy Siskind on the piano. Jeremy is a former colleague of Laurie Sims and Andrew Rathbun, who are on the faculty of the School of Music at Western Michigan University. And I have both Andrew and Laurie here both on the line and in person in our classical WMUK studio. So to you, Andrew, does this bring back a memory of recording it? I do love how you got in and opened it up, that last prelude, so much.
Yeah, it does bring back memories of recording. I don't know how Laurie feels, but anytime I listen to anything I do, I want to go and like fix things like, oh, that G sharp is a little high, or, you know, just little details. It's difficult for me to listen to, like, I'm really happy with how it came out, but for me personally, it's challenging to listen to recordings that I've done without, hearing or seeing the warts and wanting to, you know, cover them up with concealer. So, That's
Andrew, I have to tell you that most of my recordings I usually hear here at WMUK. This is my first time. Yeah, I'm like, oh, gosh, did I do that?
Yeah.
I don't even bother, you know?
Yeah, I mean, often what happens is, I mean, I'm sure Laurie feels the same way. Like, once you get through the recording process, then, you know, there's some editing to be done, and you have to listen to 16 takes of something or however many takes you've done. Actually, I don't think Laurie did.
I don't do that.
I don't think Laurie did a lot of takes, so maybe in her case. In our case, we did probably more takes because of the improvisation, so usually we got the written material, you know, pretty solid, and then we'd maybe take a couple runs at the improvised sections. So once you get finished with that process, you sort of like, oh, do I have to listen to it again? So maybe you do it one more time when it's all said and done, and then you kind of move on. So I haven't actually, similar, I haven't listened to this a ton since it came out, just because we spent so much time on it, getting it out.
Well, Laurie, during the music, Laurie was telling me that you all had a very special set of ears in the process with you, a woman named Judith Sherman.
Yeah.
You want to tell us about her?
Yeah, she's just one of the, you know, stalwarts in you know, recording of concert music and classical music. And I think this was the first time Laurie got a chance to work with her. She's actually, when you were speaking before about how the project came about, she was also in the audience for Laurie's concerts and the Jeremy and myself concert. I'd gotten a chance to work with her because on some projects with an American composer who lives in Switzerland that uses her frequently. And then my wife Helen did her recording with her, which I sort of helped her produce. So I kind of got to know Judy, you know, that way. And immediately it's easy to recognize, like, what an amazing producer and engineer that she is. So she was also very encouraging after the concerts, like, you guys should do this as a thing. Like, you guys should do this together. You know, that this is a great concept and you should make a CD of this. So she was also instrumental in encouraging us to do it, and then when she came to record, you know, it's just a dream to get to work with someone like that who's just got such amazing ears and is also so great at capturing, you know, acoustic music.
Mm-hmm. The album is it's on Amazon, it's on iTunes, it's available in downloads and physical forms as well, from Centaur Records. It's called Impressions of Debussy, and it features Laurie Sims, Andrew Rathbun, and Jeremy Siskind, who, of course, was one of your colleagues at the time. Maybe we could talk a little about his contribution to this. I remember Jeremy, who's, of course, still very well and happily living in California now. I remember him as a person with a real gift for melody and improvisation and different styles.
Yeah, he's a brilliant pianist, and you know, he's he's someone who you can't do this kind of project with just any old jazz piano player off the street. They have to have a certain acumen when it comes to playing, you know, concert music and classical music, which he certainly had in spades. I mean, I don't think he considers himself really a classical piano player by any stretch, but certainly he has enough of a window into that world that he's able to inhabit it, you know, very adeptly.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, Jeremy, when he did his, I don't know if it was a New York debut concert, but that he, the first half was jazz and the second half was the, all the Debussy etudes.
Yes.
So, you know, he has, first of all, cultivated a, you know, a classical sound, and also he has a very deep knowledge into the, you know, the aesthetics of Debussy, mm-hmm. and is just generally a very colorful player. Mm-hmm. And so, and always in his jazz, as a non-jazz person, I could always hear the influence of Debussy just in the lots of little things. I mean, sometimes it was more pronounced than other times, but I think that's something that that is definitely in his whole system, so to speak.
The influences are there.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
I happen to remember an experiment. Jeremy Siskind took the stage and played, nonstop for, just improvised for an hour or so. And, you know, I heard, you know, being a classical person myself, I heard, I got your Prokofiev and your Bernstein and your Shostakovich and your mm-hmm. Rachmaninoff. And mm-hmm. It was all improvised, but it felt like many influences coming together, a real kaleidoscope.
Yeah.
Agreed.
1, 2, 3. Yeah, absolutely.
So it's the three of you on this recording, made in March in the Dalton Center Recital Hall, Judith Sherman producing. And there's also a recognition of a Caddy grant from the Arts Council of Greater
yes.
Kalamazoo here,
yeah.
And acknowledgement of the Gilmore for putting it all together. How did you take it from, 24 preludes to... 18 tracks, meaning there's nine specific preludes that became reimagined.
Well, it was just a matter of length, right? Like, we couldn't do everything that we had prepared, so we just sort of decided on these seemed to be like the strongest, for at least from our vantage point. I mean, Laurie can just play the snot out of the whole thing, so just whatever. It was just basically what we had prepared and brought to the table and what we felt was strong, and then again, length. You know, we didn't want it to be too long. I'm not a fan of these, like, oh, here's four CDs worth of music. That's just too much, unless you're capturing, you know, the entire collection. Although I think that, no, I don't think the entire collection can fit on one CD, just the regular written music. So that's how we arrived at that.
And how did you narrow things down? Had you actually prepared other preludes to work on?
Yeah, when we did the concert, I think there's like three more that we didn't record.
I think the ones that were chosen lend themselves best to, I guess, the most amount of improvisation, or maybe moving away from the subject in a certain kind of way. Mm-hmm. I think I would guess, although, you know, this is not my milieu at all, that some of them would be, you know, like something like What the West Wind Saw is a little bit more of a almost like a Liszt-ian type of piece, mm-hmm. That might, you know, it might be superfluous, actually, in a kind of way to gather that. It's a little bit more specific in its designation.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew, when you took one of these preludes, did you feel some sort of burden to do it justice, or did you feel like, hey, I've got a whole drawing board to myself here?
Yeah, I mean, speaking for myself, I tried to, with the exception of one of them, I tried to really stay close to what I felt like the original intent was. And I tried to have as much of the DNA of the original in there, so you could see the the synergy between our version and the original version. So that's how I approached it. With again, the only one that really doesn't fit that is our version of minstrels, which is it's almost like our version is almost like a monk version of a Debussy prelude, just because this opening, the opening phrase of that, the opening gesture is so suggestive of a lot of the melodies of Thelonious Monk that I thought, well, I'm going to try this. And I was really reluctant to do it. And one of the other reasons I tried it too was because Jeremy's such a great stride player. And I thought, well, maybe it would be interesting on the concert to move away from all, you know, so much like kind of slow moving and serene tempos and whatnot to something that's a little peppier. I mean, personally, I could listen to a whole concert of just like slow ballads, you know, slow, dreamy, ethereal ballads. But I know that's not everyone's cup of tea. So maybe I thought, oh, well, maybe this will contrast, you know, all this other stuff that I've done. But generally, I did try and, you know, be really cognizant of the original music and the intent of the music and tried to stick with that.
We are going to let you choose our final set of pieces to close out with this hour here on Classical WMUK, and that's you, Andrew. But before we go, I thought if there was perhaps any further thoughts on this release. I understand, like you said at the beginning of the hour, this may become a Grammy nomination, which is very exciting for the three of you. The idea goes back a few years, but I can't congratulate you enough on its the final product that's in my hands right now, which is available to download or a physical CD. Lori, I'll start with you here at the end of the hour. I know this is a past project now. You have lots of stuff on your plate in now and in the future as well.
Okay, what do you want me to say? I'm like, yes.
True.
You know, it's so funny. It doesn't really feel like a past project yet. I mean, it's maybe because it, you know, it's taken a little bit of time to get off the ground. And I think Debussy is very much still a part of my life. So I'm so excited about the way this is going. And I'm hoping that, you know, as things ease up, that we'll be able to have a chance to also take the show on the road, and so people can hear how it sounds different probably every time. Yeah.
Yeah, Lori's being too modest because she just performed on Sunday at Carytown Concert House in a streaming event, which was some of the Debussy Preludes. And then Dutilleux, am I saying that right, Lori? I could never say that correctly. I always want to get those L's in there. And then I think Lori's also returning to Carytown to do another program in the spring. Is that correct, Lori?
Well, it is correct. Yes.
And Debussy was not always your favorite composer.
No, it's the funny story that I didn't like Debussy until all of a sudden one day I woke up in my late 30s, and it's just been an obsession for me. So, I was telling you now I'm back on track that I did get a grant from the university to make video recordings. I decided that I didn't realize as I was writing it how appropriate it would be for now. It was pre-pandemic, but the idea is to have these be on YouTube and also have some explanation and maybe some guidance on how to listen or practice or whatever it is. So it's sort of like an educational and a recording venture. Hoping to do that sometime real soon, coming real soon to a station near you.
Andrew, what thoughts do you have at the end of our conversation here? And what set of pieces do you want to hear?
How much time do we have left?
We have about 6 minutes, so we'll hear at least some of both.
Yeah, so why don't you do Dead Leaves, tracks 9 and 10. And I'm not going to try and do the French pronunciation of the titles.
Three more.
I can find that. You want to put a bow on this for us, Andrew?
I'm sorry. No, it's not deadly. 9 and 10 are the wind on the plain.
Oh,
sorry.
Le vent dans la plaine.
Yeah, thank you.
It's my fake French.
I just the only bow I would put on it is, you know, this has been it took a minute to get it all together, and it was certainly this was one of the ones where the boulder seemed to get heavier as we kept pushing it up the hill. But I'm really satisfied with the results, and you know, to get to appear on a recording with the likes of Jeremy and the likes of Lori, who, you know, this record is worth getting just for the masterful piano playing alone. Like, I'm just sort of in awe of Lori's renditions of the pieces, and you know, what Jeremy brings to the table. It's a fascinating you know, to bookend these two pieces back to back, and just listen to these two masterful pianists just have at it is just fantastic. I do hope we can do a concert of this sometime where we're sort of ping ponging back and forth, because I think it would be really interesting.
I do too.
To yeah.
We'll leave it there today. Thank you, Andrew, and thank you, Lori.
Thank you, Kara.
Thanks, Kara.
All right.